Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Voices of Montana, the statewide talk show that talks about a lot of things and occasionally has different sorts of hosts. Today, your host is Taylor Brown. I'm glad to be part of the show today. It's been such a treat to have Steve Arviscow for the last couple of days, and Steve will be back again tomorrow and Friday. Of course, Tom Schultz, our regular host, is laid up with some medical emergencies, and he's going to be taking care of his repaired ankle for the next few days. He'll be back on next week, though, and we're looking forward to that. Meanwhile, Taylor Brown today, here your host for Voices of Montana. Let's talk a little history today. Our nation is coming up on its 250th birthday, right? Think back to what was going on 150 years ago today. Back in 1876, because 150 years ago today, our nation was looking forward to July 4th. Here we were partway through May, looking forward to the 4th of July, because why? We were planning a huge 100-year centennial celebration. We'd finished up the Civil War. We were back to being one nation again, and it was an exciting time as we moved to our 100th centennial. But out here in the West, out here in Montana, things were still a little wild and a little uncivilized. So they sent a man named George Armstrong Custer to Montana, along with some others, where he was to lead the 7th Cavalry on a mission to locate, engage, and force resisting Lakota Sioux and Northern Cheyenne people back onto the reservations. That was his mission 150 years ago today. He wasn't too worried about the big centennial celebration and the fireworks and, of course, the creation of baseball. I don't know if you also know that was the creation of baseball.
Really?
Right there. Yeah, right at that time. But he was his job was to lead the 7th out here to locate and engage and force resisting Lakota Sioux back onto and Cheyenne back onto the reservations. Well, he did locate them all right, and some Arapaho too, and he did engage with them. But they did not force those Sioux and Cheyenne and Arapaho anywhere. Instead, Lieutenant Colonel Custer and the 268 men under his command would not live to celebrate America's centennial a month from now or 2 months from now on July 4th. Because 9 days before that centennial, those soldiers met their end on June 25th, 1876, just south of present-day Hardin in the famous Battle of the Little Bighorn. So here in Montana, at this moment, 150 years later, not only are we about to recognize the 250th anniversary of our country here in July, but in a few weeks just before that, we will also commemorate the 150th anniversary of the Battle of the Little Bighorn. And that Montana event is our subject today, the Battle of the Little Bighorn, or the Battle of the Greasy Grass, as our guest might refer to it today. Ladies and gentlemen, it is a treat to have in the studio with me today Eugene Little Coyote. Eugene is a Cheyenne tribal member and a former tribal president, I might add, although his current responsibility is as assistant to the vice president of the tribe. Ernest Littlemouth is the current Cheyenne vice president, and Ernest was here in my office 2 or 3 weeks ago, came in and shared some of the stories of the Cheyenne and their engagement in the Battle of the Little Bighorn. So I asked Eugene to come back and help me tell that story. So Eugene, such a treat to have you here. Welcome to the Voices of Montana program.
Thank you, Taylor.
Today you're on Voice of Montana, which is great for your resume. This is a big thing for you. But yesterday you were on a phone interview. You and Ernest were on a phone interview with the New York Times. Tell us about that.
Well, it came as a surprise to me. I was with my daughter at the clinic, and she had to get an exam. And Ernest interrupted me in the waiting room saying, "Hey, we have this interview with the New York Times at 2 o'clock. And I'm like, "What?" So I had to wrap up there, rush back to the office, and get on the phone and help him with an interview by the New York Times regarding the 150th anniversary.
Great. Now we're going to have even more people coming to Bighorn County thanks to your interview. I'm sure it was a good one. Maybe just quickly, you mentioned your work at the clinic. Just quickly tell your background and what you do so people understand your responsibility here.
Okay, starting from right now, I am the executive assistant to the vice president, Ernest Littlemouth, and he has been delegated in writing by the president, the Northern Cheyenne president, Gene Small, to be in charge of our 150th anniversary of the Battle of the Little Bighorn commemorative events. So for several years, the vice president's office has been engaged with tribal consultation with the National Park Service's local, it's a long title, the Little Bighorn Battlefield National Monument.
Right.
And they're rebuilding their visitor center constructing a new visitor center. So we were engaged in consultation with that. Now it's transitioned into being a part of the commemorative events and planning,
right,
in partnership with the battlefield. I'm going to refer to the National Park Service as just the battlefield.
Sure. And or the monument.
Could say the monument. Yeah, so it's a big affair.
It was a battlefield first, and a couple years later, it was a monument. Let's continue our conversation. Our guest today is Eugene Little Coyote, the assistant to the vice president of the Northern Cheyenne Tribe. We're going to talk about these history and get into that in just a moment as we move to the discussion of the 150th anniversary of the Battle of the Little Bighorn. On today's Voices of Montana program, I'm Taylor Brown, your guest host today, hosting a program that's a little bit about Montana history and a little bit about Montana's immediate future, because in about a month, a very historic event is going to happen in Montana. First of all, the Little Bighorn Battlefield National Monument there near Hardin is one of the most visited attractions in the whole state. It's right behind Yellowstone National Park and right behind Glacier Park for visitor attractions on a normal year. And this year, it's the 150th anniversary of the Battle of the Little Bighorn. It is going to be crazy, Eugene, down along that Little Bighorn River there south of Hardin. So I wanted to have you talk more about it. My guest is Eugene Little Coyote. He's assistant to the vice president there, Vice President Ernest Littlemouth for the Northern Cheyenne Tribe. And first of all, this is a huge historic event for Montana this year, maybe the biggest in the state. We'll let you talk about some of the logistics you expect to see in your neighborhood in a moment. But what's the objective of the Cheyenne tribe? Because Cheyenne were involved in the battle from the very start. They were in the camp that George Custer attacked. So you guys have been involved from the start. Your reservation is just a few miles away. What's the perspective of your objective, the Cheyenne tribe's objective of this major event next month?
Before I get to the objective of our tribe, let me quickly introduce myself in my language, if I may.
That'd be marvelous.
Okay. Epiwona, good morning. Mea nahan nandis tisave. Nasota edan. Vetanoe nahista, which means good morning. My name is Morning Killer, and I'm a Cheyenne, a Sota Cheyenne, and I come from around Tongue River.
I hope Ernest is listening, because yeah. Ernest Littlemouth is very good in Cheyenne language.
Yeah, it's his first language. It's my second language. It's my life dream to be able to become fluent in it. But back to the objective of our tribe is for this 150th, which is going to be huge and monumental, pun intended. We want to celebrate this victory. We believe we fought the good fight against ethnic cleansing.
Right.
And we want to change our own mindset of being treated like villains when we believe occupying, roaming, hunting by treaty rights on our indigenous lands.
Mm-hmm.
When Custer's 7th Cavalry attacked us
at the
village. And that, along with bringing our story, our narrative out, because it's been buried and lost in time, either through the interpretation of the battlefield or the monument, and a hyper-focus on Sitting Bull, who's awesome, who's one of my heroes, but you know, the Cheyenne have their own narrative as well about this battle. So we want to bring that up.
Let's talk about that narrative, because a visitor to the Little Bighorn Battlefield will notice Native American influence there. Why, look, there's Native Americans walking right there on the street. Why, here's some of them that are waiting on us at the convenience store. And why, there's one of them on a horse or one on a tractor farming. Those are not Cheyenne. That is the Crow Reservation. And so when you talk about going to the park, you're not seeing the Cheyenne unless you come from the east. So the Cheyenne story, to you, the Cheyenne story is a critical part of the battle. The Crow, of course, were allies of the 7th Cavalry at that time. They were providing the scouts. The Cheyenne were the ones who were attacked. And you're proud of what their response in that attack.
Yes. So let me preface that also with, I have a presentation called 10 Things You Didn't Know About the Battle of the Little Bighorn. One of them, I think number one or two, was like there were actually two battlefields 4 miles apart. The Reno battlefield to the south, mm-hmm. and then the Custer battlefield to the north. And it just happens to be that there was not one massive Indian village. It's a complex of six major camp circles from the different tribes. And there were smaller camp circles attached to each of those six majors. But the northernmost camp circle was that of the Cheyenne. And it just so happened when Custer divided his troops and tried to attack at both ends. Well, Reno hit the south end, the Hunkpapa Lakota, and then Custer swung around down Medicine-Tail Coulee where the Cheyenne camp circle was.
So he had the good fortune to walk into the Cheyenne.
Yeah.
Wow. And all the, well, give us another one. What is something else we didn't know about the battle that we need to?
What surprised me? You know, I was learning as I go, and I have great mentors like the retired last chief historian of Little Bighorn Battlefield, John Dorner. He clued me in on a lot of this, but another thing in that 10 things I didn't know about the Battle of the Little Bighorn was that the tribes weren't really on the warpath. So to qualify that statement... the oral histories that have been documented in interviews show that the general councils of all those tribes met and said, tried to hold the young warriors back and said, we're not trying to fight. We detected their troops and their scouts detected ours. So we knew of each other.
Right.
Each other's forces, villages. But we didn't want to fight. And so we actually posted what we call military societies, warriors, on the east side of Little Bighorn River to prevent the young warriors from going out and starting a fight.
The hotheads that want to run out and into it.
You know? That's right. Mm-hmm. So in John Stanzen Timber's book, Cheyenne Memories, he had a real cool quote about... in verbatim of what the council said, you know, if they want to talk, we'll talk. But if they want to fight, we'll let them have it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But that was surprising. It was like, oh, we weren't, you know.
Well, actually, their purpose was to replenish the Cheyenne tribe at that time. At their purpose, the Cheyenne were, I wouldn't say guests would be too strong, but they were being befriended by the Sioux tribes to kind of replenish, because they'd been through some awful trauma the year before. There was a low point for the tribe when they were trying to replenish and put together a good hunt for that summer and build back.
That's true. On several months before then, on March 17th, 1876, was the Battle of Powder River, which was about 30 miles south of Broadus. And the Cheyenne camp was hit by a detachment from Crook's forces, and the village was wiped out, and the pony herd was captured. But the next night, we captured back most of the ponies, and we found refuge down the river with the Ogallalas with Crazy Horse. And from there, the Ogallalas and Cheyenne went up towards Chalk Buttes, I think around the vicinity of Ekalaka, and found the Hunkpapa Sioux with Sitting Bull, who re-outfitted the Cheyenne. Mm-hmm. And gave us provisions, teepee lodges, which were critical. Yeah. So, yeah. And then from there, the three tribes decided, well, let's band together, protection in numbers. And they started roaming and hunting this entire area to, again, replenish what had been destroyed, our homes.
I'm loving the history, and I'm a history buff, so thank you, Eugene, for that. We want to also talk about what's coming up in the next few weeks. So today you're listening to the Voices of Montana program. Taylor Brown here as your guest host, and our subject is the Battle of the Little Bighorn and the battlefield of the Little Bighorn National Monument. And more than that, we're going to talk about the upcoming 150th anniversary of that battle in about 6 weeks, the commemoration of the 150th battle where George Armstrong Custer and the 7th Cavalry attacked about 7,000 or 8,000 Sioux and Cheyenne and Arapaho, and the 260 some of those soldiers did not live to see the next month. So today our subject is being discussed by a fellow who's pretty knowledgeable about this. Eugene Little Coyote is a former tribal president, now assistant to Vice President Ernest Littlemouth, and he's been sharing some of the Cheyenne perspective. And over the next 6 weeks, I imagine as we close in on this 150th anniversary of the Little Bighorn, I bet there'll be a lot of different perspectives covered. So I wanted Eugene to share the Cheyenne perspective today. But Eugene, the people that are coming to this event, I mean, you've been hearing from other tribes, other states. What do you expect's going to happen 6 weeks from now at the 150th anniversary?
I think there will be thousands and thousands of tribal members from all sorts of tribes, not just the Plains Indian tribes, but in particular, I think a lot of the Lakota tribes from North and South Dakota as well. So Vice President Littlemouth has been working closely with the Great Plains Tribal Chairman's Association out of Rapid City, which is a coalition of all the chairmen or presidents from the Lakota tribes and a few others. And they're planning something big. They're anticipating 1,000 horseback riders.
1,000 horseback riders. That sounds like the great centennial cattle drive of 30 years ago.
Yeah, I'm even struggling to picture it in my mind.
That's a lot of feed. That's a lot of brand inspections. That's a lot of horse trailers. I mean, maybe 1,000 horses. Wow. And you said some of them might ride here.
Yeah, I believe that we'll probably see hundreds, at least hundreds of different horseback riders from North and South Dakota, the Lakota tribes. I think even maybe some from Minnesota. I'm a little vague on that, the particulars, but yeah, they're talking about it in some of our joint planning sessions with these tribes. They've been talking about the logistics, you know, and I'm not a horse person. I rode in my youth a little bit, but they were getting it down to a science that I don't fully understand. How much hay or grass, in terms of
water,
pounds, water every day each horse should require, space, parking for their trailers. You had mentioned, I didn't realize you need inspections or permits to cross state lines and things like that. But that's what some of the logistics being talked about.
So how are they going to do that? I mean, first of all, they're not going to do it on the Cheyenne Reservation. So it'll be on the Crow Reservation. But much of the actual encampment area, as you drive by the interstate and look up at the Little Bighorn Battlefield, the area, the flat area where the encampment was, is not in the National Monument. So that is the area, much of that area will be probably where they can set up those horses and is that the concept? I mean, it's going to look not unlike it did when you had 7,000 or 8,000 tribal members camped there before.
That's correct. So we're being welcomed by the Realbert family that own private property on the west bank of the Little Bighorn, which coincidentally is the historic site of the Cheyenne Camp Circle at the time of the battle. But they've welcomed us. We can camp there. We can stage our horses there. At least one group of riders is tentatively planning to cross the river from the Realbert reenactment up to the park. But if I remember correctly, the Cheyenne River Sioux tribe has a ranch, a big ranch, just a little ways from the Reno Monument. So they might be coming. But as I understand it, there might be at least seven groups of different horseback riders from the different tribes all converging from different directions and approaches.
If somebody hears this and they think just out of the blue, I think I'm going to go. Maybe they're from one of Montana's other tribes that wants to come and participate or ride down from Fort Belknap or ride down from Browning and be part of it. I mean, what would they do next? Would they reach out to Ernest or where would they find out, okay, will there be room for my horse? Can I bring a horse? That kind of stuff.
Yeah, they should reach out to Ernest or the Great Plains Tribal Chairmans. we've been holding, what I would think is historic joint planning sessions. Mm-hmm. We've always cooperated on different issues, legal issues through the decades. But if somebody were interested in riding, yeah, just reach out to either the Northern Cheyenne Tribe under Ernest or the Great Plains Tribal Chairmans to inquire more about coordinating
Well, and I don't want to skim over the contribution of the Real Bird family, of Henry Real Bird and that family, because they have done so much to, well, they've been the ones that do the reenactment. If you've been to the reenactment, that's been on their ground. That's been their project. So they are, I mean, I don't want to overstate their or understate their contribution to allow this to happen on their land.
Yeah, I was really surprised that they were so welcoming, and their generosity and kindness humbles us. So, I can't say enough about Henry and Jim and Curtis. They're right with us in the planning.
Well, it's going to be, again, it's going to be so big and so, or likely could be, who knows what it actually will be. We don't have any idea, but it could be just extraordinary. And usually when those things happen, it's a little bit of a zoo. It's a little bit of a, we don't really know what to do with, you know, somebody will walk, where do I put all these goats? Goats, what are goats doing here? You know, whatever, it doesn't matter. There's going to be things that are going to go haywire on it. But that's part of the magic of it. That's part of the event, and it takes a lot of cooperation, a lot of understanding. There'll be 7th Cavalry reenactors there who will be down to every button and every buckle, will be just as authentic as they can make it. I mean, the number of people that'll be involved in this. I hope you're enjoying the program today, even though Tom Schultz isn't here. And Tom, I hope you're listening out there as you're, and we're wishing you the best for a quick recovery from that ankle surgery last week. Taylor Brown, your guest host today, and our subject is the upcoming 150th anniversary of the Battle of the Little Bighorn. My guest is Eugene Little Coyote, who's a member of the Northern Cheyenne Tribe, now assistant to the vice president. Before I go back to Eugene, let me remind you that tomorrow we'll be back with Steve Arviscow as a guest host, tomorrow and Friday, and he'll have one of my favorite humans on the planet, political author John Bennion, will be Steve Arviscow's guest tomorrow, talking about his new edition of his book, Big Sky Politics. He did a great version that came out about 20 years ago. He's updated it now, and John will be on to talk about his book, Big Sky Politics. And I don't know if Steve Arviscow has told you, but he's a former politician too. Steve used to be a state legislator in Colorado before he moved to Montana many years ago. Then on Friday, Steve is out to the Montana Special Olympic State Games. So Cody, you'll be alone in the studio on Friday as Steve takes the show out on the road to the stadium for Special Olympics, a growing program. This is the most Special Olympic athletes ever in the Special Olympic Special Games in Montana. 1,200 athletes. That is, I can't imagine how many hugs that is. that is a lot of hugs for those Special Olympians. And Steve will be right in the middle of it. He'll be broadcasting Voices of Montana this Friday, day after tomorrow, from Special Olympics. So we'll be looking forward to that. Now back to the history lesson. Again, Eugene Little Coyote joining me here as we talk about the 150th anniversary of the Custer Battle. And we just talked about some of the logistics, Eugene. You said you don't know how many thousands of people are coming. You projected perhaps 1,000 horses. That's just hard to imagine the logistics of what's going to happen. But we don't want to discourage people from coming. You're welcome to come if you're out there listening, thinking, you know, I've been a while since I've been to the Custer Battlefield, which we used to call it before it became Battle of the Little Bighorn. And if you think it's been a while since I've seen that, one thing you won't get to see is the brand new visitor center. They've just put a huge amount in the last 2 years into developing a new visitor center. I mean, you'll be able to see it, but you won't be able to go in it because it won't be complete till James Nowitzki thought maybe about September. He's the manager, the current acting manager. About September, he told Eugene and I this morning that people will be able to go in and see it. But they are prepared to host it, and they're going to have the Little Bighorn Battlefield Monument is closed most days of the week. It's only open Friday and Saturday and Sunday. If you're planning on going this week, for example, it's closed Monday through Thursday. But during that week, he said it will be open all 3 days. It'll be open for people to come and visit. Sounds like they've made some parking plans. They've got a shuttle service so they can shuttle people from plenty of parking. It's still going to be a challenge, though, on the monument side of the river.
Yeah, we've been working closely with James and his team to try and plan to accommodate all visitors, not just tribal visitors. In particular, we've been asking if there are going to be special accommodations for handicapped people, sure, and elders. Sure. So we're working all that out.
Well, I know James is taking it very seriously, and you'll be able to see the new facility. I mean, you can see it there, but they won't be allowing people in it. And he said they're going to remove all the construction equipment and the barriers and stuff. So it'll be ready for people that week. Might not look like it today. I mean, today they're still working hard to get it constructed. And it will be beautiful when it's done, and we wish them the best in that. But the problem is the 150th anniversary is coming up anyway. So across the river, just to the west of where that site is, to the west of the cemetery, will be the reenactment that's taking place. And that'll be, of course, what would happen regardless. The Real Bird family's done that reenactment every year. But this year, the audience will be quite a bit different. The people there to experience and watch it. I believe you told me, or maybe it was Ernest told me, Ernest Littlemouth, the vice chairman, that it might be like a week-long deal. I mean, like you're expecting people maybe the weekend before.
Yes, the Real Bird family is allowed, has I guess, communicated, conveyed at some of our joint planning sessions that tribes that wish to camp can move in at their convenience. So there's no real set date. However, the Sunday preceding the anniversary, and I don't have a calendar in front of me, what day would that be? I think most people will be trying to move in, or most tribes will be trying to move into camp that preceding Sunday and Monday, and then start holding their cultural and commemorative events Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday through Friday.
Well, the monument itself will be open Wednesday the 25th, the Thursday the 26th, the 27th, or no, what Thursday the 25th, the 25th, 26th, and 27th. It will be open the 25th, 26th, and 27th. But on the private ground, I mean, you just have to check in with the folks that are putting together the program, and we that's the way to participate in it. It occurs to me, though, this time, I don't know who gets to be in the reenactment. I guess that's up to the Real Bird family to determine that. But this time, instead of having it to be all local Crow to help put on the get horseback and get in the right place and get the war paint on and be and represent the Native American, this time there'll be plenty of local Sioux and local Arapaho and local Cheyenne that'll be right there on the grounds with you.
Yeah, it's great. I want to say that, you know, the saying comes to mind. Imitation is the sincerest form of flattery. So if somebody's portraying the Cheyenne, cool.
And yeah. I won't get into that. We jump off if we talked about who portrays who the best, you know. So, but let's just talk about the other tribes that are involved. One thing people forget, you said in the 10 things you talked about that people don't know, one of them is they forget the other tribes are involved. The Arapaho played a role here that, of course, are now on the Wind River Reservation down in central Wyoming.
That's correct. So, if you look on the Park Service's website, they'll talk about 5, 6, or 7 identified Arapaho warriors. But I think just by the law of averages and intermarriages between the allied tribes, there had to have been a lot more Arapaho there than what's accounted for.
But, more than General Custer was expecting, I would say.
Heck yeah. Heck yeah. And so Two Moons, one of the leading Kit Fox warriors at the time, who later became a chief for the Cheyenne. But at the time, he was married to, one of his wives was Arapaho, so... There goes that marriage between, you know, intermarriages. So, the Arapaho, all the different Lakotas. I was told when we first started this consultation years ago, there were 17 tribes in consultation. So 17 different tribes from across the plains were identified as having a role in the battle.
Talk about the role of one individual who's none of those tribes you just mentioned. One fellow that was in that encampment was a Ute. His name was Yellow Nose, and he was captured by he was there as a captive, right? Or tell me the role he played.
Well, Yellow Nose, I'll say it like this, and you're right. So Yellow Nose was a formidable Cheyenne warrior. However, as a little boy, he was captured from the Ute tribe, I think down in Colorado, mm-hmm. but he was raised
Cheyenne,
mm-hmm. and so he lived, fought, and died as a Cheyenne. but he was pretty darn interesting because one of my favorite ledger arts, you know, ledger art is where Native Americans drew on ledger books, scenes.
Right.
And they weren't, you know, trained artists. So it looks like really two-dimensional line art. But one of them is the coup of Yellow Nose. So Yellow Nose, during the battle, the Custer part of the battle, had captured a guide on one of their flags and counted coup on a soldier with it. And that's just magnificent. But Yellowknows was originally born a Ute, captured by the Cheyenne, and raised as a Cheyenne, and fought as a Cheyenne warrior.
Interesting that he captured the U.S. colors. I mean, I don't think that's happened in history where the U.S. colors have been captured on U.S. soil.
Hmm. Well, that's what I'm told, too. And I think some people are darn proud of that. And I know the Ute tribe is, too, because if you go to their website, they have a section dedicated to him.
Wow. Wow.
Or the Southern Ute tribe of Colorado.
The amount of history, that this one event, this one Sunday afternoon event 150 years ago has created around it, and the epitomized is I think, very interesting. 150 years ago, in the spring and summer of 1876, the U.S. government launched a military campaign on a portion of the Sioux and Cheyenne Indians who refused to live within the boundaries of the Great Sioux Reservation. Well, the 7th Cavalry and their Indian allies attacked a village of about 7,000 or 8,000 people on June 25, 1876. 263 soldiers perished that day, and 350 survived on the U.S. side. Today, we're talking about the Native American side, and my discussion is with Eugene Little Coyote, who is now Assistant to the Vice President of the Northern Cheyenne Tribe. Eugene, we've talked about how Cheyenne feel this is a chance to recognize the role of the Cheyenne tribe. You just mentioned the Cheyenne were at the front when Custer came down that hill and across that river. He came to the Cheyenne camp. The Cheyenne met him there at that camp. And you talked about the Cheyenne warrior was the one who took the flag from the Cheyenne. But let's flag from the cavalry. But let's talk about the goal of your tribe, the goal going forward of what your tribe wants to accomplish, and use this event as a springboard to tell your story. And where does it go from here?
That's correct. Tell our story. I call it the Lost Cheyenne Narrative, and we want to bring that back out to mostly, you know, the intended audience is ourselves, because our history is not taught very well, and it was discouraged through generations of boarding schools. But we want to spark some resilience in our youth and ourselves, and be proud and be stand up tall. But that's the history, and but we also have a second objective. And that's to show that we want people to know the Cheyenne and all Native Americans are an important part of America.
Right.
Yeah. So 2 years ago, we had a theme at the anniversary, the battlefield anniversary, from a quote from Wooden Legs, a warrior who fought Custer. And his quote was, long ago, we were enemies. Today, we are friends. And the message we're trying to convey is that we are an important part of America. A lot of us enlist and serve in the military to defend this country. So my family has a legacy of that. I've not served. However, my father's a Vietnam veteran. His father was a World War II veteran. My namesake, Eugene mm-hmm. Little Coyote. He's actually buried at the Custer battlefield.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
My maternal grandfather, Ben Bertram Sr., is also a World War II veteran. So, you know, we fight for this country as well today.
So I don't need to be nervous if I walk there and see a headstone with your name on it. It's not you. It's your grandfather.
That's correct. Okay.
You know, you think about that and you said we're friends today, but that really goes back a lot further. I mean, my mother grew up there adjacent to the reservation. She grew up at Bernie. Mm-hmm. She grew up on the Bones Brothers Ranch at Bernie. And cool. So I know how long that relationship has been. And my dad used to rope with the Smalls. I mean, exactly. The Cheyenne, you're showing me the Cheyenne helicopter. Yeah. Yeah. That relationship goes back a long. It just wasn't known everywhere else. You talked about, for example, in 1972, when Montana redid their constitution, they created something that many other states are recognized happens in Montana versus other tribes. Montana respects its tribes and is admired for that across the nation, partly because of our constitution in 1972.
Yeah, I'm told that from other tribes that our constitution is pretty unique, the Montana constitution. And I do mean our, because I'm also a proud Montanan. Mm-hmm. But is it Article 10? I can't remember. You'll have to fact check that. It talks about recognizing and honoring the Native American heritage and preservation of our culture. It's well, good stuff.
Just show me. Tell me again about the T-shirt.
Okay, so about a month ago,
turned around and showed me the back of his T-shirt.
The U.S. Army named a helicopter after the Cheyenne, It's their newest helicopter in development. It's the MV-75. We are invited down to the 2026 summit of, what is that? The Army Aviation Warfighting Summit, where they had a naming ceremony. It was a real proud day for us. But the cool thing is the Army is inspired and drawing off of the Cheyenne warrior spirit to, you know.
Well, it's about time. We already had Apache helicopters for a long time. Yeah. And Blackhawks for a long time. It's about time. Well,
yeah, this one's state of the art, so it's cool.
Well, all right. Well, that is exciting. Well, Eugene, I so appreciate you coming in today and talking about this. Again, tomorrow we'll have political author John Binion on with Steve Arbuckle. Friday we'll be doing from the Special Olympics. But 6 weeks from now, we'll be in the middle of what could be the biggest event of Montana for this year, and that is the 150th anniversary of the Battle of the Little Bighorn. We got about a minute left. Any more factoids or any more couple of things we didn't know about the battle that we should know? First of all, where do they, again, the name of the place they go if they want to come to it and want to be part of it? You said the tribal council,
the Great Plains Tribal Chairman's Association out of Rapid City. You'll have to like Google that.
Great Plains Tribal Chairman's Association.
Or you can contact Vice President Littlemouth's office with the tribe. 406-477-6284 is our main line.
Okay.
Just ask for us.
All right. Sounds good. Well, we appreciate it. Thank you for being in today and thank you for sharing. Thank you so much, Taylor. You should see the stack of books he's got here. He's really a student of this important event in our history, and we're proud to share it with you today on The Voice of Montana. I'm Taylor Brown. Been a treat to serve as your guest host today. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you again tomorrow on Montana Statewide Talk Show, Voices of Montana.
Thanks for joining us for the podcast, and join us weekdays live from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. for more Voices of Montana on great radio stations all across our Treasure State.